Hi, this is Jamie Davis, and this is the telecoms.com podcast. So it's a bit of a streamlined staff today. I think most people are actually away on holiday, as it's starting to get pretty miserable in London. So it's just myself and Ray.
Are you saying you're scraping the barrel here?
Well, I mean, you know,
yes,
you did insult me earlier scraping this week by calling me ugly, so, you know.
I just said you weren't a pretty boy.
I mean, you know, one assumption.
Yeah, but it's scraping the barrel, we're getting the best, though. So.
We got rid of all the crap on top, and now we're getting to the good stuff. Basically.
The buttery crust.
So, despite that, it's actually been, you know, it's summertime. You like to think that you're scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of news. It's actually been a pretty good
week. There is
as
no
well.
Downtime. There's no downtime.
Well, this week, three big vendors and three big topics. So Ericsson, then we're going to move on to Samsung, and then finally Cisco. And then before Pierre freaks out, if you are watching this on SoundCloud or iTunes, can also watch the video on Facebook and YouTube. And if you're watching it on the video on Facebook and YouTube, vice versa. So let's kick things off. Firstly, with Ericsson.
Okay.
So we both had a chat with them this morning. Regarding a bit of news, and they're putting more of a focus on the US. So I know I spoke to them, and then you spoke to them immediately afterwards. So why don't you start off with your thoughts? What did you take away from the conversation with Frederick?
So it was head of networks, Frederick Jedling.
I chose not to say his surname because I couldn't pronounce it.
Freddy. Yeah.
He's a good guy. I like him. And it makes sense what they're doing. They're increasing their investment. Well, so they put it that way. They're just ramping up their resource.
Yeah. You know,
the word investment to me always means dollars, but they were not prepared to talk about anything to do with money or dollars or, you know, what kind of percentage increase of actual money spent this will be. But they are making new hires. It's not this is incremental headcount additions in engineering for 5G software baseband developments. They're adding 100 AI experts.
Yep.
They already have a facility in Austin for chip development. And they're going to start doing manufacturing in North America, in the US. And this does make sense because they have been ramping up their R&D in the past couple of years. They need to be perceived to be and to be the leader in 5G, because if they haven't got that, they haven't really got anything, you could argue. And also their investment, their increase in investment in R&D in the last 18 months is showing to actually pay off. And we saw that in the second quarter.
Well, there's a lot of arguments about who's stealing market share off who, whether who's doing better.
Yeah. But I think also it's really important for Ericsson's customers to see this kind of commitment. Obviously, they have to follow up, but there's nothing to suggest they won't. So it makes sense from a technology, from a strategic, and from a marketing perspective. What they have to do now, actually, is find all these experts, because they want the very cream of the crop in AI, in next generation radio access network software development. These people do not grow on trees. They have to come from somewhere.
I mean, I think they're going to be all right in terms of when you look at the radio side of things. I think AI will be an interesting recruitment process.
Yes.
Because if you think you've got super graduates coming out of places like, I don't know, the universities in California or MIT, do they want, if they're specializing in AI, do they want to go work for Ericsson?
Well,
or do they want to go work for one of the sexy internet companies with all their great benefits there?
Well, so it will depend what Ericsson has to offer.
Yeah,
in terms of money and benefits, but also career progression. And the interesting thing about their approach to the AI stuff. Obviously, the baseband developers, that's very specifically you're going to need knowledge of chip software development, and they'll need people that understand radio access networks. On the AI stuff, this is more to do with the focus there is very much on research into how AI is going to change the world, companies differ. So they're not going to need somebody with communications industry expertise there. So it broadens the scope. It means it's much more likely that they could at least try and attract the cream of the crop coming out of universities or out of small AI houses, or even, of course, they could acquire a small AI developer that has already done some interesting work.
I mean, that's the way the big companies have done it before. I mean, Google are probably in the leading position in the world because they acquired DeepMind, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And, that has built the foundation they built their entire business, AI business on.
Yeah.
I think it's...
Is it still, mainly here in London?
No, it's all over the world now. So it was I think it was a spin out of Oxford University. Mm. But then the leaders of that business have been used as the guys that run AI in Google.
Mm.
So it is, it's interesting. The one thing I did like is that Frederick said to me,
Freddie.
I said to him, what's the big focus moving forward? And he said, well, we're still working on it. And so, we have some areas in mind, but...
Oh, what are you talking about here?
The AI developments, the roadmap. Right. And
so you're talking about Ericsson in general.
Oh, no. Just
we don't know what we're doing yet. we'll figure it out.
But, I mean, that's the mentality that all the internet players have got. They say, well, we don't actually know. We've got ideas of what we want to do, but... The fail-fast business model, or the adaptive business model, is all about reacting to external factors and sort of scaling up technology and ideas off the back of it. Now, if Ericsson can build that mentality into their software business, that, for me, is one of the most promising signs.
Good point.
And I think, because they have been... I mean, I don't pretend to be... I mean, I know a reason...
You pretend to be a lot of things.
I don't pretend to be a lot of things, but I think Ian was saying last week that... in terms of end-to-end solutions, putting the software in there, Nokia is by far leading Ericsson when it comes to the software business. I mean, is that what you pick up as well, or
depends what you mean by the software business? I don't know. That's a very broad statement.
I'm trying to say because I can't remember exactly what he said, so I'm trying to keep it as top line as possible. So
let's give him a text.
do you agree with something vague?
Do you agree that something very vague that Ian said?
Right, yeah, it's not ideal. Yes. Just say yes.
Maybe.
But, I mean, overall, I think it's a great strategy. I think if you've...
It makes sense.
It's very Huawei-like, I thought. In the sense that you put your engineers close to your customers and you have them on hand to help with deployment, development, you localize everything. I mean, that's what a few people have said to me in the past, that Huawei is incredibly good at customer service and account management. And it's because they've got bodies on the ground ready to help you.
Yes, they have that, but it's also, I think, the approach of Huawei. This is what people have said to me, is that, Huawei says to its customers, what is it that you want to do?
Yeah.
And we'll help you do it, rather than here's some stuff that we think will help you.
That's perfect with Ericsson as well. You regionalize the operations, and you develop a supply chain around demand.
And localized manufacturing means they can get the products which they're going to start manufacturing. 5G products in the US means they can get those products developed and turned around and to the customers quicker. And as all those US operators are, trying to be first to the market, that plays into that story as well.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's just overall a good strategy. I think the one thing that I'll be curious about... Hi, Bart, we're using this. we're recording, so...
Okay, sorry.
the interesting thing about it is that so they said to me, and I'm sure they said exactly the same thing to you, this is new investments. This isn't investment that's been taken from elsewhere, because I think it's a bit of a snub to some operations in Europe, for instance. They're turning around saying, look, you know, we're building our AI business over there because we have the competences in the US and the manufacturing capabilities. They denied that this was a move away from Europe. They're going to at least sustain investments in the European market. But it will be interesting to see if that promise is continued, whether, you know, is the competence in terms of AI and software out around Silicon Valley? Is investments going to be continued to, are the investments in Europe going to continue the way they have done in previous years, or is it just going to be gradually moved off elsewhere?
I don't see it as a snub to Europe. They're playing to their, I mean, the US is their biggest single market.
Yeah.
So I think they're playing to that.
I think it's a quarter of revenues, isn't it?
Yeah. And so there's a lot of AI expertise. They'll be hiring AI people in other places as well, I'm sure. And they have localized teams in other major markets, China and India, as well as Europe. So,
cool. Well, on that AI topic, we're going to move on to Samsung.
Oh, a segue.
See?
Do they make segues? They should make segues.
Yeah. I know how to do it smoothly. Segues? What are you even bloody on about? AI and Samsung. So what they announced earlier this week was it's been a big week for Samsung. They've launched their flagship today. They said they're launching a smart speaker product, which is going to be powered by Bixby, their own virtual assistant, their competitor or alternative to Google and Echo.
Bixby.
And yeah, I know it's a terrible name.
1970s cartoon character.
I think it does mean something in Korean,
right?
But I can't remember what it actually
really?
Is.
It doesn't sound Korean.
No. I mean, when you translate it means something in Korean. Not Bixby, the English words. But on top of that, they've announced a £22 billion investment into or new investment over the next 3 to 5 years into AI and 5G. Now,
and other developing technologies.
Yeah, I think biopharmaceuticals and...
Well remembered.
Yeah, there we go. And electrical components for the smart car, I think. Telematics. I mean, what this is... How much of this do you think is going to be geared towards their consumer business? Or are they doubling down on this semiconductor unit, which has been absolutely flying over the last couple of quarters?
I have no idea. I haven't got a clue. I mean, it's a massive company. It's a lot of money. They're hitting the right notes here. I mean, you know, I would imagine most of it's going to be for the consumer business. But... you know, like all other major technology companies, the next big opportunity for all of these companies is addressing the needs of the industrial verticals.
Oh, yeah.
So I would imagine there'd be quite a lot there.
Industrial IoT, something that was, I think, a big message from when I was over in Shanghai for Mobile World Congress. You know, the Asian telcos have been looking at the vertical applications of IoT and how they can play a role.
China Mobile's results, I think their Q2 results included a lot of revenues from MBIoT, didn't it?
I mean, it was staggering. I mean, it just put everything in perspective when you look at China Mobile. It's, you know, we're talking about, O2's the leader in the UK market at the moment. So I think it's just pipped EE with something like 31 million subs.
Wow.
And then you have China Mobile, their net adds over the last 3 months was 18 million subscriptions. I mean, it just puts things in perspective. But I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, what's your phone? What phone have you got? Have you got a Samsung?
I have.
Do you use Bixby?
No.
Have you ever used Bixby?
No. Is it even on your phone?
I have
though?
A really old phone.
Yeah, exactly. Is it only on recent phones? It might be only on recent phones.
Yeah.
I think it's been over the last couple of quarters.
Oh, yeah, so yeah, this one is like right. 4 or 5 years old.
I think all of the voice activation, I think, you know, a lot of that AI-enabled stuff still has a long way to go before older people like me don't get incredibly frustrated with it.
Well, I mean, I think that'll be looking at AI developments in Samsung, and I think with one of their products launches yesterday, I think it was last night they launched it all in the US, wasn't it? Smart speakers. You know, if their AI component isn't living up to the standards that are set by Google and Amazon, are they actually going to be able to compete in this market? Because I think it's going to be, well, they must have spent millions and millions and millions developing this horrible bit of kit that looks
I haven't seen it yet.
It looks awful. It does look a bit like a knockoff of the HomePod, though, doesn't it? Apple's version.
That has 6% of market share, by the way.
Yeah.
It sounds the best, but nobody uses it. Nobody buys it, really.
I think that could be the difference, though. Smart speakers are starting to enter into mainstream market. Mm. So people like, I don't know, like yourself, because you'll have an interest in the AI. People who don't have an interest in the AI, they just want a speaker. They're going to start buying off people like
Samsung.
Well,
the HomePod only plays... I mean, there's like very few things that Siri does. Like, it doesn't do any clever stuff. It's like, plays the track. Maybe the weather, that's it.
Well, I think that's where the difference is between... as soon as you start getting into the mainstream market, you've got companies like Bose and... what are the other big manufacturers? I can't name.
Benelux and...
Those sort
Sonos,
of guys.
Sonos is the big one.
They'll just create speakers where you can install your own virtual assistant. And I think that's the market, I think, that Google and Amazon are really... They don't care that much about hardware. Their core competency is software and services. They're going to want to get referral advertising revenues through through the software, dominating the operating system.
I think for cars it's going to be good. Like Mercedes just launched their own. I'm like, why can't you use an Android one already? They have to start from scratch. I don't know.
You control the environment though, don't you?
Yeah.
You control
yeah.
the experience.
But there's Apple CarPlay and then Android, whatever it's called, probably same CarPlay. That can use AI.
Yeah. No, I think it's that voice interaction. It'll be, you talk about trying to make the road safer.
Yeah, because your hands are...
We're doing is checking it. I do it occasionally, I'll be honest, when I'm driving. I do occasionally go, I got a text. Oh, okay.
Now, when people are full-on texting, like, as they're crawling through traffic, it drives me nuts. honestly, they're just, like, looking down, going, like, a mile per hour, and like, it's still dangerous.
Or if it is even something like changing the radio station.
Yeah, that's the...
That's a distraction.
Are we getting off topic here?
All right.
Sorry.
Okay, so, AI, I think it's, it's a big area for Samsung. I think it ties into so many different business units.
I mean, there isn't a day goes by now without a significant AI. I mean, there's obviously a lot of artificial intelligence investment and activity around the world, but just in the communications sector, I mean, a year ago there was an occasional reference of it. If you just look at this week, I mean, there's just so much happening. You've got, the Ericsson... investment in the US. You've got Samsung talking about that as part of that major investment. You've got Intel saying they're going to ramp up and push on ahead with adding AI capabilities into their Xeon chips, because they want to be the number one there and catch up with Nvidia and others. And we're starting to see now as well operators, trialing and piloting the use of machine learning in, for example, cell optimization in mobile networks.
Yeah.
And some really interesting trials as well, which, there was... Ian Morris on Light Reading this week wrote about the Magyar Telekom, so part of Deutsche Telekom's empire, how they did a trial in Budapest where the machine learning algorithm came up with a different cell optimization plan to the engineers. And the engineers said, this doesn't make any sense, it should be done this way, and it turned out that the machine learning result was far better optimized than what the engineers came up with. So that kind of thing is... But this is progress, and this is... So things are really starting to move on now, and this can start to make a massive difference to customer experience, to operational efficiencies, to better use of CapEx and so on and so forth, and just general smarts and intelligence. Of course, if you talk to the operators, they'll say, that'll enable us to take those engineering employees. So I think there might be a little bit of that. But in the end, companies will want to do the best job they can with whatever tools available, whether it's software, hardware, or human beings.
I mean,
we're getting to the point now where the software is starting to be able to do things better.
Do you know, I don't believe when a lot of telcos say that they're going to, you know, it adds this value add on top that the engineers are going to focus on. I personally don't believe that. But what I do believe...
No, but it depends on how efficient the teams are run anyway. If they're under-resourced, I mean, if you could take the biggest area of underinvestment and the biggest areas for challenges for all operators right now is their security teams.
Yeah.
You know, now AI is already playing a significant role in network security, but there's still a lot of human resource needed now. Now, if you can retrain some people from your mobile network operations into your security team, then that for me makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I personally don't see it. I think, I mean, I'm a skeptic, and I don't think that they'll do that. I'd personally be, well, no, I mean, I'm skeptical about everything except Welsh rugby. We're going to win the next World Cup. Uh-huh. I honestly think they'll probably trim the staff there, but I do think they'll reinvest, and I think they'll reinvest in the value-added services. So, like, they're, you know, chasing after the multiplay. They perhaps will put more resource and investment into developing applications and a business unit for the smart home, for instance, so they can get into some IoT side of things, or into the vertical, so they can get into industrial IoT or even content business. I think the network operations, they say that they'll, you know, the value adds will be the staff that take away the redundant, the monotonous tasks, and let them concentrate on value adds. I don't think they'll do that. I just think they'll reallocate resource to other areas which will be more profitable.
Well, I mean, I think it'll go from case to case.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk to some operators, and literally they're highly paid, highly trained staff are doing nothing but putting out fires every day, like correcting mistakes and making things work again.
Yeah,
when these are people who are qualified to actually develop unique capabilities internally that are suitable to those operations, and they simply don't have the time to do it. If you can free up that time and they actually do the job that they were hired to do
to make
a difference, then that makes a lot of sense. In some operators, you know, you literally will have a bunch of people that where they just go, there's your cards. End of line for you.
Now I can see the ones that are under real financial pressure, they'll be the ones. Well, I mean, that's pretty much all of them, to be honest.
Yeah, it might come back to bite some of them in the bum, of course.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's very short termist. You know, when you're reporting to the city, the majority of investors only look over the 3 month period, especially when you've got people like Elliot, the Vulture Fund from the US. Coming in and all
vulture fund.
But all they care about is the next 3 months. They care about the dividends, or the next 12 months. They care about the dividends. They care about free cash, pushing up the share price and selling off in the short term so they can make money. It's, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm going to criticize. It sounds like I'm criticizing it. I am criticizing it, but
it's accurate.
But it is a business model that works for them. So I mean, you can't really say. You know, you can't really say boo.
Next week, we're talking about how to bring down the capitalist economy.
So, okay, AI done.
Right.
Well, not done for the moment, because we're trying to keep this one short and sweet.
And failing.
Moving on to, we're not doing too badly, actually. We're about 22 minutes. Doing all right. Last one. You wanted to talk about Cisco.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of focus always about technology in our industry, but you know, there's three key things, all equally important. Technology is one of them. Money, of course, is the second one, and the third one is people.
Yep.
And so Cisco, this week it was announced, or I think Light Reading was first with the story. Thanks
plug.
To Jeff Baumgartner, that Yvette Knoof, the head of the Cisco service provider business, is moving on and will be leaving. So this these kind of changes, you know, somebody in that kind of very senior position creates a lot of uncertainty in the market, no matter how quickly, you know, somebody is, somebody sort of stepping into the shoes in the short term is named. All of those customers will go, well, who's going to be in charge of it next? Where will they take that part of the business? How well will they understand service provider needs, you know, around 5G? Because 5G is driving everything these days. So it's these kind of things, you know, it's only one person, but, you know, bringing in somebody else into a role like that can result in such significant changes.
But the thing is, like, one person is a massive deal, because how often is the CEO flown out to massive contract negotiations so you can put the right face on the company, the head of that division? I know it seems like a really obvious thing to say, but the replacement isn't going to be the same person. So customers who have been dealing with this head of departments for the last 3 or 4 months, all of a sudden that relationship just breaks down again.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, people going into these things, usually they have the first 100-day plan when they go and visit all of the main customers to say hi, to help, you know, put things at rest. But when people like this come in, you know, in such high-level positions, and let's face it, there isn't a single operator in the world that doesn't engage with Cisco in some way or another. And some of the most progressive telcos, look at Argeo in India, that, you know, Cisco is such an incredibly important part of all the innovation that they are doing in that market, and how much they've changed the potential of communications services. So I would imagine that whoever does come in as the permanent replacement for Yvette Kanouf, one of the first things they're going to do is
get out to India.
That's right. But, you know, of course, they'll be going to AT&T and Verizon and all the other tier one, Deutsche Telekom, all the other tier ones as well. But, you know, when somebody like that comes in, they don't just come in and go, all right, I'm going to sit in the seat and do what the person did before. They bring in the people. They trust it. You create a new layer of middle management, massive upheaval. So you can bet your bottom dollar that you know, the likes of Nokia and Juniper and Huawei and Arista and other companies will be looking to capitalize on the next couple of months.
Do you know where she's going?
No, she's got a directorship somewhere, and she's mentioned something about...
Oh, what? Exact, non-exact direct thing?
The third stage of her career, I don't know. But it's there wasn't any announcement of going to a competitor or something like that. But it doesn't matter where she's going. It's, you know, Cisco is one of the key companies in this industry, and that service provider role is very important. And you can quite easily lose a lot of business very, very quickly unless you get somebody very strong into that role and making sure that everybody's very happy with where Cisco's taking that. Especially as they're just currently selling off all of the video service provider capabilities that they built up.
I mean, you said they're, you know, they're one of the market leaders, and she's a well-known name in the industry. I bet you any money that you got the likes of Nokia, Juniper, Huawei trying to message her over LinkedIn or get her mobile phone number, say, you know, you've got the relationships with some of the biggest boys in the world. Why aren't you sending your CV our way?
I doubt she uses a CV, but yeah.
You know what I mean.
Why don't you come for an interview?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Doubt it.
So, bit of turmoil
change
at Cisco.
Change.
All change. Over to the US for Ericsson, into the AI world for Samsung, and a hunt for a new head of service. Do you say it's the service provider division over at Cisco?
Yep.
Well, see, summers aren't that
boring.
There is
no downtime.
You know, they all go away on holiday. They leave all the juicy stuff for me and you.
They go away.
The people.
Well, saying that, as soon as Scott gets back next week, I'm going to try and take a long weekend back in Wales. So I'm going to try and duck out of the office next Friday. So might be a completely new cast next week.
Absolutely. I'll make myself unavailable.
And on that note, see you next week.